Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond here, along with, ladies and gentlemen, the outlaw, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, man?
The controversial one, myself. What's going on, Dave?
Yeah, the censored Kyle Barber. Maybe the neutered Kyle Barber tonight. We'll see. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
What's going on, guys? I hope y'all have had an excellent start to your weeks.
It has. It's been a little crazy today, but hey, Bubba, we're very excited to have our next guest, a man that knows just a little bit of what it's like to be at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium on a Saturday or whatever night the game or day the game is.
Most definitely. I mean, when you think of Pirate football, one of the major traditions you think of is, of course, first down Pirates. Well, this guy spent more than 3.5 decades on the chain crew at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium for East Carolina football games. Welcome into the show, Mr. Johnny Davis.
Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Johnny, you've seen a lot of Pirate football. I guess people would like to know, why did you decide now to stop being on the chain gang at Dowdy Ficklin?
Well, I figured 35 years was long enough. And one thing they did this year, we used to have a crew of 10.
Right.
And because of the virus and everything going around this year, they cut it to 5. So we got a 5-man crew instead of a 10-man crew. And they wanted me to do what I would have had to do is 2 jobs. Ordinarily, I keep up with the penalty chart for the officials. Every time there's a penalty, I got to record it, who did, number, officials, the time, quarter. They want me to also keep the stats, you know, wherever the ball was spotted at. Like, if it was first down ball on the 20, I had to do that every play. And I figure, you know, that's just too much for one person to do, really. Because they're trying to run a play every 30 seconds. All I would be doing was writing. I wouldn't know, see none of the game.
Well, Johnny, we got your partner in crime, Kyle Barber, that can help you. Kyle from LaGrange, he knows a lot about football. He can be there on the chain gang. What do you say, Kyle?
Well, he just said, Dave, that they had cut the crew in half. So I'm not sure how I could be of any help.
It's Kyle from LaGrange.
He is.
It is Kyle from LaGrange.
I got Ken folks in LaGrange, man. I graduated from high school in LaGrange.
Well, was it North Lenoir at the time?
No, it was before North Lenoir. It was Frank.
The middle school.
It's now, middle right? school now.
Yeah. It was the segregated black high school back in the day.
Right. Yeah, it was a black high school. It was Frank and Lenoir County. It was Frank, Savannah, and Woodington.
That's right. Yeah. No, I went to middle school at Frank. And I know that school well. Who's your family here in LaGrange?
Do you remember Bobby Dawson?
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, my wife. I'm not originally from here.
Okay.
My wife is originally from here. I did move here briefly when I went to middle school, and then moved away again. My wife grew up here, and we actually live on the land. This is turning into a personal segment here, but we live on the land where she grew up off 903. You know where Jason is?
Yeah, going towards Snow Hill.
Yeah, that's where I live.
Okay. Yeah, I've been through that way. Yeah, I got. If anybody. Gardner, Davis, Sutton, they relate to me in LaGrange.
Oh, yeah, no a lot of Suttons.
Johnny, we wanted to have you on to celebrate your time at Dowdy Ficklin. I appreciate, by the way, that's for anybody, the guys, to do it a handful of years.
Wait one second, Dave. Sutton's Grill, was that your people?
Maybe, they probably were. I mean, I was like teenage back in the day. That's been like 50 some years. I can't remember way back then, man.
Gotcha.
But, Johnny, I was saying after over 30 years, I mean, that's a long time. Can you tell us, how did you get the job? And do you remember the first game you did at Dowdy Ficklin?
I can't remember the first game, but I believe Art Baker was the coach. And I got into it. My next door neighbor, he was big into the Pirate Club. And I started going to games with him. And his brother was in the Pirate Club also. His name was Gil Davis. I don't know if you know him or not. But he got me into doing it for him. You know, we just go every Saturday. I live right next to him. And I started off on the chain gang, you know, pulling the chain. Then I got a promotion to the, they called me the sideline liaison. That means I just kept the penalty chart. Every time there was a flag thrown, I had to record all that. And that's basically how I got started, really. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I probably would stay on, but, you know, with the corona, the virus going around, I probably didn't need to be around all them people. But they said not going to be anybody at the game, so, but 35 years is enough. I just watch it on TV.
You were actually part of nine different head coaches. You know, when you think about a lot of times members of the media covering the White House and they say this person, this man or woman has been through nine administrations, but you've been through that's a long time. I was 11 years old when you started. They were still in diapers, and I was 11 when you started the chain gang. That's how long ago it's been.
Let me see if I can name those nine. Let me see.
Okay.
It was Art Baker. I believe Bill Lewis came after Art Baker, right?
Yep.
Baker, Lewis, Logan.
Yep.
Thompson.
There you go.
That's right.
That's four, right?
Yep.
After Thompson, we had Skip Hoke.
There you go.
Five. After Hoke, we had Coach Ruff.
Yep.
After That's Coach right. Ruff, we had Coach Mo Montgomery.
That's right.
And now Coach Houston.
That's right.
Right. Did you start under Emery or Baker? That's what we had, Emery. But did you start?
Yeah, if it was 1984, that was Emery's final year.
Okay, it had to be. If it was 84, it had to be Coach Emery. Then Coach Baker came in.
Right. So there you go. We had those nine: Emery, Baker, Lewis, Logan, Thompson, Holtz, Ruff, Montgomery, and Houston. So, what changes do you remember during that time? I mean, there's a lot of changes from 1984 to 2019. What are some of the things that really stick out as far as maybe the stadium or maybe the fans or what sticks out for you?
Well, the main thing, when I started there was no televised game, you know? And I remember we used to have Thursday night games sometimes. We had a couple Thursday night games. And we always had a fight in the Thursday night game in the stands or something.
I was a student then. That was the Syracuse game, I believe.
Remember that?
Ronnie McNabb.
And yeah.
Marvin Gray.
And that good receiver was one of them. Rocket, the Ishmael boy. One of the – what's his brother's name? His brother played at Notre Dame, Rocket.
Yeah. Right. And then, like you're saying, his brother at Syracuse was Quadri.
Yeah, Quadri. Yeah, that's him.
They called him the missile.
Yeah. I got a story about him. You know, you could smoke inside the stadium, you know, back in the day. And he would smoke on the sideline on the chain game. And he'd come up and he'd say, "Sir, will you please not smoke?" I remember that about him, Rocky Ismail, yeah. But, you know, there was no television. And the games were a lot shorter. You know, games we get out there in 2.5, 3 hours. Now it's like 4 hours, you know, with all the TV. Because, see, they got to do like four commercials every quarter. And it gets kind of tough, really, especially when it's cold and rainy.
Everybody in the stands is like, drag that guy in the red shirt off the field now.
Yeah, yeah. We call that guy the red hat.
Right.
What's some of the worst? You mentioned it being cold and rainy. What's some of the worst weather? What's some of the games you can remember with the worst weather that you had to work in?
Oh, man.
Conference championship game in 2009 against Houston?
Oh, that December. Yeah. It was cold that day. It was rough that day. But mostly we had pretty good weather considering, you know. They have a rain shower every now and then. I can deal with the cold better than the rain.
Yeah.
Because when you got to write, you know, that don't take too well when you're trying to write and it's raining. But, the television really changed things there. And also, when we first started, we used to go into We always get to the game an hour and a half before starting time. And we'd immediately go in and have a conference with the officials. You know, it was down under the north stand where the officials dressed at. And they let us in, you know, and they had good snacks, good food and everything in there. Then the last 10 years, they moved them out. I think they moved them over with Ninja. So that was a big change also.
What was some of the, as far as coaches are concerned, for ECU or for the opposing coaches, did you have any that memorable moments, maybe some exchanges between coaches on maybe for our side or maybe the away side that you can tell us?
Oh, yeah. Now, when some crews come in, they want me on the home side for one half and on the visitor side for one half. That's why when the ACC crew comes in, they want you like that. But the other crews, most of them on the visitor side. Okay. And the worst coach, really, I mean, you probably knew him. Guy from Southern Miss named Jeff Bauer. He was terrible.
That's for our Southern Miss fans that are watching right now. Your coach is the worst.
Man, he complained. He complained about just about every play. I'll tell you a story about him. You know, most of those teams, they got the get back coaches. They keep the teams back. And the coaches can stand out there. And he was getting in our way. And the officials always tell us, if you got problems, let me know. Well, we kept having problems with him, so we got to go. We said, we're going to get this guy. So we got him. He was out there around the chain, and one guy rattled, went into the chain around his leg, and when it was the first down we had to move, we jerked and yanked his leg. Boy, you should have stirred some of his language. But, he had a real good he was real good about speaking the English language. I say that.
Well, you know, him and Logan had a lot of great battles, and we love Southern Miss. And of course, they're without their head coach resigned yesterday. We're going to talk about that, Johnny, at the end of the show here in a little bit. We'll have the guys from To the Top podcast who broke that story along with us, so we'll be talking to them.
Johnny, I had a question, a follow-up question that Bauer talked about Southern Miss. Do you remember a guy on the sidelines when Jeff Bauer was there at Southern Miss, a priest named Father Tommy that used to carry a shillelagh stick down there on the sidelines?
I believe I do remember that guy.
Yeah, he was a legend down there. He would hold up that shillelagh, which is a Catholic. Well, I don't want to call it just a stick, but it's some sort of Irish Catholic church thing. And he would hold that shillelagh up and wave it at the crowd. And I remember some of our fans thinking it was a voodoo stick.
There was a guy from Temple that was like that too, a little old bitty. I guess he was you can't call him midgets, can you? He was a little man.
You can if you want to, it's fine with me.
But he was Catholic. He had a little head on his collar and stuff. Yeah. Boy, he talked more trash than anybody I know on the sideline. Like they gave him a sideline pass. I guess he was with the team. I don't know if it was the team priest or what, but yeah, they a lot of characters down there, man. I can tell you that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, any fans ever give you any trouble that maybe after a game or people that are interfering with what you're trying to do?
No. I mean, and to show you how people were. When we going into the stadium, well, there was 10 of us in the crew, and we'd meet at, I don't know if you know where, J.C. Park is in Greenville?
Yeah.
We'd meet there, and then we'd take two cars and drive to the stadium. Well, when we got out of the car, we got uniforms just like the officials, basically. You know, but we got the pirate shirts on they give to us. And the people, they so dumb, man. Fans, because they out there tailgating and drinking and carrying on. Got they just going, hey, come on, can I get some good calls today? They think we officials, you know.
Yeah.
And one guy, the year that we played Carolina, I think it was the the 7-41 game.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and the guy, we were walking in, and the guy come up, and he was, you know, he had been tailgating all morning, all day, basically. And he pulled out his wallet, man, and pulled about $200 or $300. He said, come on, Blue, take this. I want some calls, man. I reached for it, put it back in his pocket.
did he snatch it back?
Yeah. He was playing with me. I guess he thought I wasn't gonna take it.
But well, you know what? You could have took it because you ain't an official.
I know. You're right.
You could have told him, right. I got you, baby. I got you.
You're right. Yeah. Jeff Bowell, man. That guy, man, he complained about everything. I'm telling you, now the East Carolina coach that was bad like that, Scotty Montgomery. Man, he was terrible. Really. He bitched and complained so much on a call, every call. You know what the officials do over there? They walk by and laugh and keep going.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, it's hard to remember every coach, but it seems like Rick Minner, when he was at Cincinnati, would have been that way. Do you remember Coach Minner?
Yeah.
Was he like that?
Yeah. Not really, because Minner, he kind of stayed down and went into the field by himself.
Okay. You know?
But the guy that was at Tulsa, what's the guy's name?
Todd Graham?
Steve.
I know exactly who you're talking about. Steve Cragthorpe back in the day?
Cragthorpe, yeah.
That's him. He was bad, too. His daddy was an assistant with him. Yeah, he was a bad guy, too.
Hey. Steve Cragthorpe, he moved on to Louisville, and things didn't go very well for him at Louisville.
Yeah, he did great.
I can see why.
It did not work.
Hey, Johnny, I have a question as far as we talk about the worst. Is there one of your favorite coaches for the opposing team, or is there a guy that you were surprised that maybe they were very nice to you or that they were cool to you?
Oh, yeah, Charlie Scrum.
Really?
Yeah, South Florida. Yeah, he was great, man. Yeah, he talked to you all the time with him down. Most of the coaches don't want to talk to you, but he would. You know, he'd talk to you and laugh with you and carry on. Yeah, Coach Scrum, yeah, he was a good guy. Trying to thank this boy from Coach Houston when he was at James Madison came.
Yeah.
He was real good. He went his strength coach, Big John.
Yeah.
He's from Greenville.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Rose.
Yeah, we talked about that. We talked a lot. Yeah. But Coach Houston real nice too. He's a good guy.
I'm glad to hear that. I thought you were going to say that he was tough on you.
No, Coach Houston, he's a good guy. I see him, you know. And Coach Ruff, he talked to me all the time, too, when I was over there. Yeah. He talked to me.
Yeah, we love, of course, with Ruff and now with Houston. How do you one question I had, Johnny, is how do you feel about the program? Do you think things are heading the right direction under Coach Mike Houston?
Man, it's got to, because it can't get no worse than what it was, man. But yeah, I think it is, man. I give him a couple more years, get his people in there, you know. And I'm thinking next year will be the year.
Yeah, that sounds right.
What about, are you going to come? You said you're going to watch the games. Why not come and hang out with Kyle and all of us in the stands next year?
I might do that, man. I told the old crew that I'd probably meet up with them to usually eat before the game, meet up over at Parker's.
Oh, yeah.
I probably meet up with them a couple of times. But other than that, you know, I might go to a couple of games.
Yeah, that might be all that we could go to, Johnny.
Because, you know what? I hate to say this. I don't know if they're going to play or not.
We're playing. You know, there was already games this past weekend, and
yeah, I saw that. Yeah, but you know what? I'm glad we didn't play Marshall, ain't you?
Woo. You know what? I don't know. I don't know. that Eastern Kentucky team has a brand new head coach, and I don't think they made a very good hire. Eastern Kentucky, I'm talking about. You know, Scotty Montgomery, when he first took over, we looked real good against Western Carolina in his first game. But I don't know. I think we'll know more about Marshall when they play Appalachian State in 2 weeks.
Yeah. But didn't Montgomery win it? He won his first two, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Didn't he beat State?
He did.
Yeah, and then the South – it should be 3-0, actually, John.
Yeah, South Carolina game.
The South Carolina. And it all fell apart.
We lost the game 20-15, and we fumbled, what, Bubba, three times inside the five?
Well, he stayed on the officials too, man. He chewed them out. He chewed out. He chewed someone out every play.
Was he talking nice? Yeah. Were we exchanging Christmas cards with them, or you think that they probably won't be allowed in this house?
We can't say that on right now. he had some choice words for him, you know.
Hey, now, Johnny, what about some of the NC State and North Carolina coaches? For NC State, I was just thinking they didn't come to Greenville until Mike O'Kane in 99, but you had Coach O'Kane, also Coach O'Brien, Tom O'Brien, also Joe D'Amato never came to Greenville.
That's right.
Dave Doran came.
Yep. Yeah, Dave Doran. And then obviously for the Tar Heels, Butch Davis, John Bunning, and also Larry Fedora multiple times.
Yeah. Coach O'Kane, he never said much, you know. He was kind of like Coach Logan on the sideline, you know. He didn't say a whole lot. But and of course, Coach O'Brien, you know, he never said nothing. He just stood there, you know. I'd never seen him say anything to anybody.
Yeah, they haven't had the most exciting coaches at NC State between Mike O'Kane, Tom O'Brien, and Dave Doran. They kind of hire some stiffs over there. What about one time they did hire somebody with some personality? It was Amato.
Amato, I miss him. Yeah,
old clown shoes,
Chucky.
Yeah, I love that picture of Amato. I'll send it to you guys, and we'll put it on our social media. Maybe. It's a blast from the past, back from, I don't know if it was 2004, 5, or 6, somewhere through there. And Coach Amato was kind of like this, right in the official's face, and the look on his face was priceless. Yeah,
yeah. I know the picture you're talking about.
Chuck the chest.
Coach, I like Coach Amato. He had Phillip Rivers, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Makes the job a lot easier when you got Phillip Rivers.
111, maybe 12 ball games.
They were talking about how he threw his throwing motion and all that. Well, how long the guy been in the league? 15 years?
A long time. Yeah. Hall of Famer for sure. Bubba, we have a comment from Johnny Gardner. We have another Johnny. Let's see if we put that up on the screen. He said, Johnny's a character, love the story. So you got a new fan there along with us, Johnny. Johnny Gardner, another Johnny.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few coaches come in there. And, you know, of course, you really – sometimes some of them will talk to you and some of them won't. I remember when Miami came in, they had Jimmy Johnson was there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, before the game, and I don't know why he did this. He walked up and he asked me, he said – which way is north and which way is south, you know, at the stadium. I told him, I said, this stadium run east-west. He said, that's unusual. And most stadiums run north-south, don't they?
Yep.
But they don't run east-west.
Because you got
the north fans.
Who knows? But, yeah, you're right. Bubba might know this. How many college stadiums, Bubba, are there that run east-west? There's not many.
That's a good point.
No clue.
I have no idea. That's a good research project for Bubba Rosenbaum. Johnny, as far as –
I don't have anything else to do.
No, you don't have anything to do, right? Dad, teacher, husband, all that. Johnny, as far as – do you have any idea what you'll miss on these game days? I mean, How many hours are you talking that you had to devote to a Saturday or a game, Thursday, Friday game at home?
You'll miss seeing the co-eds.
Well, for a 3 o'clock game, we got it staying at 1:30. So I just live in Aiden, which is like 15 minutes from Greenwood. So it just takes me 15 minutes to get there. We get to the stadium 1:30, and if the game started at 3, well, you leaving there about 7:15. So it's a whole day. I don't get to look at too many of the co-heads or nothing like that, man. Once again, you do it before the game start, you know. But once the game start, man, you so busy trying to keep up with everything, man. Because if you ain't, you kind of get chewed out a little by some of the officials, you know. You got some officials that's nasty too.
Who are some? Is there some that maybe we would know, or maybe?
Have you ever worked a game with Ron Cherry?
No, he's an ACC guy, right?
Yeah,
I believe we did. I don't know. No, because he's always the real. He was always the referee. We didn't have him. We had the other guy, the guy that had a heart attack at the Carolina game. What's his name? Oh, you remember? A few years ago.
That name's, I remember something happening, but I can't remember. I don't know the name of the official, but because that happened when we were playing 2001. We were playing Syracuse. It was the second or third game of the year, the away game in the Carrier Dome. And the first or second quarter, the official had the heart attack right there on the.
Yeah, I can't think of the guy in the
Carrier Dome, but I don't know about it.
Hey, Johnny, who was the, and Bubba, you're going to help me out with this, but you'll know what I'm talking about. It's either an American official, a hit official, or either it was in Conference USA that had the really nasal voice like this. You'd be holding on the offense.
I know you would always laugh about that too, Kyle. We've discussed that on the phone. I don't recall the guy's name, but I know exactly who you're talking about, because when he would open his mic and describe whatever the penalty was, I would say that I would imitate him, and the people around us would just die laughing.
Do you know who we're talking about, Johnny?
I don't know who you're talking about, but you know what? You died on that
penalty on East Carolina.
When you're on the field down there, even the guy that sometimes those guys got their mic, you can't hear them because of the noise, man.
Yeah, the noise travels out, then you're on field. Yeah.
And see, I've got to get whoever committed the foul. I've got to get that guy's number, you know, and record it. And I used to stay with the side judge. He's the guy that's all the way back by the back judge. I used to stay with him, so he gets me the numbers and stuff. I say, "What number was it?" He said, "The way I get it for you, and it'd be about the next time out before you can get the number, man." But you know, it's kind of crazy down there.
There's always a group of guys that sit behind me throughout the whole game. It seems like they're yelling, "Hey, side judge!"
Yeah, those guys. You know, I didn't realize. You know, most of those guys are high school officials. Did you know that?
Did not.
Most of them were high school games on Thursday nights down in Texas. I had one guy. They were telling me about he worked high school games in Texas. He was saying that officials in Texas can make $800 a game officiating football.
I believe it. You know, Texas high school football is so huge. Some of their stadiums are the equivalent of FCS football stadiums.
I know they are. He told me, he said, you got to be really good. He said, the coaches got to want you. He said, you go in and screw it. He said, you won't ever go back there.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. We're very excited to have you, Johnny. I tell you what, you're such a legend, and glad to meet you. And I know that one good thing about you guys is that you guys are invisible. But, boy, like you said, if you made a mistake, then everybody would know about it, right? So it's good that you are invisible as far as that you're not a part of the game.
Yeah, as long as they don't know who we are. I told somebody somebody should have done a story on us, you know. About running the chain crew, but you know they never think about nothing like that.
You know
that's why we do.
I know
we do, Johnny.
Y'all do. Sure do.
That'd be a good segment to maybe not this year with the five man crew, but I might mention that to Meador for a segment on the Coach Houston show coming up.
Yeah,
yeah. Right. I'm going Mito. He used to be at Channel 9, didn't he?
Yeah,
he made his way around, and a good friend of the podcast. I've known him for he's a really good guy, and
he is, man.
He works his tail off, and I tell you one thing, people don't realize. I saw it today on YouTube, and I thought about him. People don't realize. I tease him all the time by asking when he sleeps because they don't realize how many hours it takes to put into that show. And if they did, they would be amazed at the amount of time you spend for like a 23-minute program.
I know, man. I can't believe it.
Hours and hours.
So do y'all get to go to the practices and stuff?
Not right now. Nobody does right now. It's all Zoom. You get to talk to Coach Houston after the practice, like we're doing right now via the internet. But normally, Dave would be going to the practices.
Yeah, I tell you one thing, Johnny. Not to pick on Coach Montgomery, but the coaches last year seeing the practices with Mike Houston versus Montgomery was night and day, night and day.
I've heard that. I believe it too, because you can see the teams really are night and day, you know?
And if you don't like Montgomery, if you don't believe in tackling in practice, ask Navy how it feels not to tackle.
I saw that game. When was it? Friday? Saturday?
Last night.
That's unlike Navy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, they. I don't know if it was just a decision of Coach Mia Matalolo, if it was the Naval Academy, or if it was because of the state of Maryland, but they did not practice tackling or hitting. Basically, all fall camp because of COVID, they practiced against tackling dummies and the air. So, I mean, that ain't going to get you ready for football.
I heard him say on his interview that it was his fault.
It was. And I believe that game last night probably helped them more than anything because BYU is a physical football team. And when you don't practice with any physicality, which is not like Navy, he was trying to be smart because of COVID, but went too far the other way. And that game last night will probably help them because they're going to have to get physical in a hurry. And, boy, they got physical last night. BYU beat the hell out of them.
I mean, 55-3, that's not even the same time zone, man.
It could have been worse.
Is it true that Navy only had like 118 yards rushing?
Yep.
They lost Malcolm Perry, but it still shouldn't have been that much of a dust.
It was all about the way they practiced. And huge mistake on his part. And like I said, I understand about being cautious about COVID, but you can't go that far.
No.
You're not even tackling because you're going to tackle on game day.
Right about that.
All right, well, Johnny, I tell you what, I hope you won't be a stranger, and I hope you'll come back on with us so we can talk some more, maybe during the football season. Now that you don't have to worry about going to the games, you can hang out with us on the show, and you're a lot of fun. I love the stories, and we're really proud of you, and we wanted to honor you tonight by having you on. I told Bubba we wanted to have you on because that's a long time, man, to be doing that, and we are very appreciative and grateful of all that you did for us.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, guys. I really do.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on, and we'll have you on again real soon. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank y'all.
All right. There we had there Johnny, and we're moving now to a friend of the podcast, Chuck Young. How are you, Chuck?
We're doing well. Sorry. Had trouble. New laptop. Didn't want to accept Google Chrome. So.
Well, we're glad you're here. We saw that on Saturday that you had 22 years of Works Ministries, and we were very proud of that. And then I noticed that Bubba and I saw that, wait a minute, our good friend Chuck Young is not going to be with us anymore. You're always going to be a friend and always with a pirate, but we wanted to have you on tonight to talk about your exciting news.
Well, yeah, it is 22 years we're very grateful for, but it won't be 23. God's been doing a lot of things both in me the last couple of years as well as outwardly the things that we know have changed with COVID and all of those different things, and he just kind of in a process of merging the two of those together, put on my heart that it was time to do something a little different. And we applied to a lot of different church jobs and joked that the one we applied to furthest away would be the one God was going to choose. And sure enough, that has been the case. And we're excited about going, but it is a long ways away.
Yeah, you're going to Kansas, right?
Sublette, Kansas. So, yeah, we're further west than Dodge City by about another 35 miles. So.
Yeah, guys, as soon as I saw the news, Chuck, I was like, I have to see where in Kansas it's located. It's the southwest corner, and so you're about to what, maybe 45 minutes or so from Oklahoma, but then also no more than probably an hour and 10 minutes from Colorado.
Well, it's 5 hours to Denver, so yeah, not but about that to get into Colorado. 2 hours north of Amarillo. There's a junior college in Liberal. There's one in Garden City and one in Dodge City, and so Shank had said he'd kind of been around to all three of those at some point. So a third of our beef kind of comes out of those three towns are where all the meat processing plants are. So you have big old feedlots. So cows as far as the eye can see, and all the farmers in Sublette grow and store all the feed in order to feed all those animals to beef them up. So it's kind of an isolated in time place. The economy will probably never really grow like crazy unless something else comes in there, but it also won't go away because the beef will always be needed and it'll just do its thing. But a neat town, small town, and a church that's been in that town longer than any other, Sublette Christian Church. So we will pastor there and look forward to getting involved in their community. And we will miss the Pirates and all that goes on here. But there was a lot that changed all around us. We kind of can't do things anywhere near the normal that we once did, and I don't know when we'll be able to get back to that. I hope one day someone will, but we just felt like it was time.
Chuck, as far as the ministry is concerned, I know that you've been a chaplain since the Logan days, and you've been you've been a friend of the podcast since the very beginning, back 2.5 years ago. Talk about, do you know of anybody that will take over after you? Will this ministry with Sportsworth continue, or is it going to be someone else who would have to start their own ministry?
There's ministries. There have been people trying to get in and around me for years. The FCA crowd has tried every time there's a new coach to slide in the door around me. And with Coach Houston, he brought his guy from JMU. We were working together, but I just kind of feel like they have their relationship. Let's let that do its thing. Again, same group kind of came in around us with some of the other teams when we couldn't eat, and it's like, okay, they can have it. Baseball, I don't know what baseball do. I had a special loyalty and relationship there. We're still ministering to them as we speak and doing some things. I just have to go about it differently because you can't, i.e. the governor, so nowhere on campus can have a gathering of a certain number, so you're just kind of trying to work in and with, and however, with those situations. But we'll keep ministering until we leave town to that crowd, and at that point, I'm not sure what all of them. I'm going to Coach Godwin and see who else in town. But sports, I will probably skeleton it to the end of the fiscal year, December 31st. Got some back expenses and reporting to do, but it will likely dissolve at the end of December. My board still has to decide that, but I think it's probably going to run its course.
Okay.
So, Chuck, you haven't been allowed during COVID to I guess, have gatherings with, I guess, primarily you've been working with baseball, you said. So has the university not allowed you to have gatherings with the players?
Yeah, I mean, we were trying to find a place on campus to get the baseball team together for dinner and Bible study. And because we were over 25, they wouldn't allow us to meet anywhere. I'm not quite sure why it's okay for football to have a team meeting, but that's not my jurisdiction. So I'm not complaining. I just don't know what the rules seem to be in one situation, but not in another situation. But
well, Chuck, I can tell you, get with me when you get off the air, and I'll tell you a little gimmick that you can get around it where you can have all the people you want.
Well, Those may have been found.
Okay, yeah, you figured it out already.
they may have been found, but you don't see me posting any pictures of anything anywhere.
So. There you go.
and I've got friends as team doctors, and they're monitoring, you know, and there's been plenty of athletes and plenty of our sports that have tested positive. But the reality is it's no more than having a cold or feeling a little under the weather for a day or two, and they're okay. But I also have friends that are older that have passed away from it. So, I mean, my emotions go all over the board with it. I'm glad I don't make those decisions. I get paid to make them. So,
yeah.
I'll stay in my lane.
Chuck, I wanted to ask you, as far as you've done a lot of great work for, thank you again. I can't thank you enough for all the hard work you've done and all the, one thing I was going to say before I was going to be serious, but the folks at Sam's Club is going to, they're going to close their doors for
They just took a pretty big hit from me pulling out of town, for sure. They lost some serious weekly revenue, no doubt. But them and the propane company and the wood pellet companies and everything else. But Jesus gets the credit for all that stuff. My wife and I and the family are blessed and honored that we can serve in that way and to be able to share him with, you know, and since I put our house on kind of Facebook, you know, wanting to hurry up and get movement, I've heard from more student athletes that spanned all those years, and that's more than enough blessing to me just to see the lives they're living now and the families they're raising, and many of them are coaching and have an impact on young men all across the state. Some are pastoring, and all those different things just make that more than worthwhile.
I wanted to ask you, as far as your relationship with, I know we talked before, but Coach Keith LeClaire, there's certain memories that we'll have to have you back on when we have more time to honor you properly. But obviously, Coach LeClaire, I know that y'all are very close.
Yeah, and I'm sharing with baseball guys that we got together, you know, that just came up again. Like, guys, I understand that he pushed. Well, I wanted them to understand two things. One, their current coach, you know, to me was one of them, because he was sitting in my house as the first group that we had in there. So I have a different relationship with him, and they can't imagine me seeing him that way. But then the hard work that gets put into everything, the coach called ALS a blessing, because it stopped him literally in his tracks of kind of worshiping getting to Omaha in baseball, and caused him to realize he needed Jesus and that Jesus loved him dearly, even in the midst of all that. And often, if we don't slow down, we can miss all those things, because we just get caught up and we're driven on a certain task. And God's got to get a hold of us, and he will do so. But yeah,
absolutely. Chuck, you talking about that relationship with, obviously, Coach LeClaire, but then Cliff Godwin, and that was one of the things that I was going to bring up. Just, I know Coach Godwin is obviously happy for you and your new opportunity, but at the same time, I'm sure he's very sad to see you go.
Yeah, we're going to sit down Thursday. He knew that I was going to interview, and I was trying to keep him abreast of where we were headed. I haven't had a chance to sit down and talk to him last Sunday. Folks at Grace Church ordained me. I had an ordination, but not in a setting with other pastors like that. So that was a special time. So I got that vote of confidence and installment at the same time the church called that they had their vote and wanted us to come. So that was a big day. And I haven't had a chance to sit down with Coach Gowan yet, but look forward to it on Thursday. We are trying to find him some folks in town that would like do Sunday chapels, other things, and I think we have some good candidates for that.
It's good to hear.
No question about it, Chuck. And I know that, again, we're going to have you. We wanted to have this. It's kind of like breaking news, so we wanted to have you on, but we definitely want to have you back on soon. By the way, before we forget, when are you leaving town?
Well, we were trying to get the house sold. We can't really wait for a closing. The closing's about 30 days. So yeah, I'm actually finishing here talking to Kevin O'Sullivan about some offers that are just coming in and breaking after just a couple days. So, but they want me there by October 1st. find a place for donkeys and horses and transport them all the way across the country as well as ourselves. And there's a lot of moving parts going on as we speak. So I don't know exactly when we'll be pulling out of town, but
all right.
Hopefully it won't be too much longer. But
all right, but before we let you go, we've got a comment, and then we're going to get to the top podcast, Jason Bailey. But Johnny Gardner said, had not heard the news of Chuck. Congratulations, sir. You have been a tremendous blessing to our program and the Greenville community. Best wishes on your new adventure. So Johnny Gardner's a great guy, and class of 91. He graduated 4 years before I did.
I appreciate that. I've appreciated all the comments from folks, because it has been our blessing and our honor. Like I said, we feel humbled that we had the chance to be here. And again, it's just exciting to see the number of guys that have matured, grown, doing great things, and having a big impact. And that we had any part to be able to love on them and share the hope of Jesus just kind of baffles me that God would allow us to be a part of such things. So grateful.
Yeah, one final question for you. How many, do you have any idea how many athletes that you touched over 22 years? I'm putting you on the spot, I know.
That's hard, because on one hand you think it's just got to be ridiculous. Same time they're here 4 or 5 years, so you're adding probably about 55 new ones each year from what you started with. So it's over 1,000. I know that. I'm not quite sure how to figure all that up, but we've given away about as many Bibles. I know that too. And who knows how many meatballs and pieces of mac and cheese we've served.
You're definitely, hey Chuck, you were the training table long before the training table was cool.
Oh, that was when Coach Logan and I met, like, hey, what can I do for you? And at that time there was no talk of training tables. He's like, my team doesn't eat very well on this one night. I said, yeah, Coach, but you don't practice on that night, so they're not showing up at my house, so you got to pick a different night. So it became Wednesday night. He wanted me to do Monday. I was like, Coach, the last thing they want to do is come around you or anything to do with football on Monday. So Wednesdays it became, and it was good because that was their last really hard physical practice. So it was like the reward of the week was then come to our house and have a big old meal. So.
No doubt.
Yeah,
well,
You talk about presenting those guys with the purple Bible. I think it was Corey Scott I saw here recently post a picture of his on Facebook. So I know that's something that means so much to them.
Yeah, we because NIV changed and wanted more money, we had to go away from purple. Now I got one that has a big lion head on it that's impressive too. But that was my annual egg hunt, was trying to find purple Bibles for Coach LeClaire to get those things out. But it got hard, but they're still getting Bibles, and Cliff's still making sure of that. And I've got a box full of them for the new crew cup that's just got here. So we still have the same label inside that Coach LeClaire typed up for his group. So message is still the same.
Thank you, Chuck, for all that you've done. And again, like I said, real soon we'll have you on so we can have maybe some former players and coaches come on. We'll do to honor you. I appreciate you very much for coming on tonight, and congratulations on the new adventure. Selfishly, I'm going to miss you a lot, and I appreciate everything you did for the program, and I know you're going to do great things out in Kansas.
I appreciate it. I thank you all and all you all do, so I'm just very grateful. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chuck, very much. Chuck Young there. Appreciate him very much. And there was some breaking news yesterday, believe it or not. What a big day. If you're a Southern Miss fan, you obviously saw to the top talk podcast. You saw the guys there break it. I know we had heard, and we also mentioned too, Jason Bailey from To the Top Talk podcast. How are you?
What's happening, fellas? This is cool, man. First time I've been a part of something like this. This is neat. And how am I? So I am way better than I was last Thursday night. It's kind of a, everybody loves Jay around here, but, you know, at Southern Miss, there's certain expectations, and thus far, you know, he did kind of steady the ship, and it was really like a stabilizing force, I think, for the football program. But we all felt that the last quarter, I guess you could say, of last season – Something happened, you know, and I'm not exactly sure what that was, but, you know, we were in pretty good shape last year and with 7 wins and then lost the final 3 games of the year and just got handled. I mean, we lost 38-10 to Western Kentucky, 34-17 to FAU, and then Tulane just handled us in the bowl game. And it was a lot of the same, all 3 games in a row. So entering this year, you know, we're hoping we had put that behind us. And what we saw the first game of the year was a lot of the same. So I've had a lot of people hit me up and ask me, you know, why the knee-jerk reaction? And my answer is it's not really a knee-jerk reaction. This is 4 in a row. And on top of that, this was a lot Jay as well, making this decision for himself. So, you know, it's sad to see him go on one hand, but it was pretty clear that the program needed some new direction. And you know, looks like we're going to give it a go with a 30-year-old offensive coordinator. So looking forward to it.
Now, you mentioned it being a lot of Jay's own decision. Would you say it's 50-50, or would you say it's more the administration or more Jay? I mean, to make a change after game one, was there already talk? It kind of lends me to believe that there was some discussion going on somewhere before the season even started. And I know your co-OC, whose name's escaping me right now, I'm sure you can tell us all his name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know he had been a head coach at what, the D3 level. Right. A real young guy. So, do you think it was something that was talked about before the season even began?
I don't know. I'm not privy to that. I do not believe so. You know, this is a weird year, fellas. This is a year with you know, COVID and with just with all that going on, and with you know, entering your fifth year as a football coach, trying to get that message across. You throw politics in there. You throw, you know, race relations in there, I think, and maybe all of that had a little bit to do with it. And like we mentioned on our podcast, sometimes it's just time to go, right? The Philadelphia Eagles got rid of Andy Reid, for goodness sake, at some point. That's one of the best coaches of football in the history of the world. So maybe it was just time. Maybe it was mutual. Maybe it had a lot to do with all of what I just said. But it's still a line from Jay. But, you know, at the end of the day, the program definitely just needed a shot in the arm, needed a little bit of new direction. And Jay stepped aside slash, you know, maybe shoved, maybe nudged aside, and here we are. But I do know that there's excitement now around the program that hasn't been there in at least a year and a half or so.
And your interim head coach, what is his name, and talk about his background?
Scotty Walden. So Scotty Walden is 30 years old, which freaks me out because I remember what I was doing at 30 years old, and I can't imagine myself leading a Division I football program, much less, you know, during this time in America. But so Scotty Walden is his fourth year here. He's the co-offensive coordinator until, you know, yesterday. I do not believe he's ever been allowed to call plays, though. Young guy, super likable, big-time energy. I think that might be the biggest thing right off the bat that you see is different between him and Jay Hobson. Jay Hobson, nothing wrong with being super-duper even-keel. But when you're kind of getting the same old, maybe a little bit of energy isn't a bad thing. I think Scotty's going to bring that right off the bat. You mentioned the D3 school that he coached at. He actually played there as well, East Texas Baptist. And he played there as soon as he was done. I want to say he was offensive coordinator for a year and then became head coach and just put up crazy numbers, like 500 yards of offense and threw the ball all over the field. Like averaged around 50 throws per game. So really came in with a shot in the arm there. And granted, this is not Division III, but, you know, it's his fourth year here. He's not brand new to Hattiesburg. He's not brand new to Southern Miss or Conference USA or Division I football. So I love it. I'm anxious to see what it looks like. I'm going to temper my expectations for the rest of the year. I think I went from, you know, looking at a conference championship and 9 or 10 wins this year to I hope we get better every game. But But he's a breath of fresh air. I'm going to kind of move where I got a little bit more light here. I don't know if you can see me over there.
There you
but,
go.
Yeah, well, in my defense, I almost missed this thing because I saw you said 8:10, and I started thinking about it. You know, I was like, you know, does he mean 7:10 my time? Yeah. So I hit up Jamie real quick. He was in the middle of a fantasy football draft. He told me, you know what, you better log on. So I hit it up real quick. So I had an office set up in there with some Southern Miss stuff behind me and all that. But I have my four-year-old running around. My wife and my mother-in-law are in there eating dinner. So I came out to the garage, and it's dark outside. So this is what you get.
Hey, you're fine, man.
Yeah, I apologize about that. I apologize about that, Jason. That's my mistake. When I was texting you today or messaging you on Twitter, had a lot going on, and I failed to specify Eastern time.
Oh, no problem, man. You know, I've ran into that on my podcast before. I was trying to interview Lamar Holmes with the Atlanta Falcons, and we had set it up, and I called him, and he said, man, I thought you were going to call me, like, you know, an hour ago. I said, that's my bad. I should have specified. So I get it, man, but I'm glad we could do this. This is super neat.
So, Jason, what do you think Coach has to do to get the job on a permanent basis? I mean, you mentioned you tempered your expectations from a conference championship to get better every week. You think 6 wins gets him the job? Or
heck yes. At this point, I think so. I mean, I think if you just see offensive improvement, if we see some ingenuity, if we see something that we haven't seen for the last, you know, even though we did put up some offensive stats last year, we can't run the ball. If you see anything improvement in that way, I'll just take energy on the sideline. Energy on the sideline from the players, getting the team to play as one instead of a bunch of individuals out there. We got some good talent, man. We got speed out of this world. We got a kid named Frank Gore Jr. who might be one of the best we've ever had at some point. We've got talent in the skill positions in droves. So someone that could put that together. And I've never been super duper worried about Southern Miss's defense, because through the years I think we've always held our own defensively. It's just when we get that guy that can put up a lot of points, we do really good. So, I guess that's what you're hoping for. 6 wins, I would sign up for that right now and back up the Brinks truck.
Now, I know if he doesn't get it done, let's say, you know, worst case scenario, a 2-10 type season. A name that I already, you know, hear coming up, and obviously it makes sense because he was there before and he's at Baylor now, Fedora, amongst others. What names are you hearing? And, of course, it's all just speculation at this point.
Yeah, so I jotted down a few names here, and this is so preliminary. I mean, this thing happened like an hour ago, right?
Right.
But any good athletic director, I can guarantee you, has a list of 7 or 8 names in the top drawer of his desk in his office right now.
You know.
So I have not seen that list, but Fedora would come to mind. He had such success here. Would he come back? I don't know. I guess I would pose that question to you guys. Yeah, I'm trying to think of somebody in your past that was super duper successful and left for a gig that played, you know, twice as much. Would he come back? I think Fedora liked it here. Southern Miss doesn't have as deep of pockets as really anybody. So you've kind of got to be able to deal with that, even though we're still – I'm not talking about we pay, you know, $750 an hour. I mean, it's around $750,000 a year that you would make. So I would like to think that's pretty cool for coaching football. But some other names, I've heard Pete Golding, defensive coordinator at Alabama. He's been at USM before. He was here for 2 years, I want to say 2016 and 17 maybe. Will Hall has been thrown around, the offensive coordinator at Tulane, just right down the road from Hattiesburg. Kevin Johns, right up the road from Hattiesburg, the offensive coordinator at Memphis. And there's another guy that he's interviewed a few times, I think, for the Southern Miss job. He played here in the early 90s, linebacker at Southern Miss, and his name is Tyrone Nix. He's kind of bounced around from here to there. He's currently the defensive coordinator at UTSA. So, I mean, those are some names right now, and there's probably a few more out there. Those are the ones that, off the top of my head, I jotted down before we started. But I think that right now, yeah, Scotty Walden has pretty much an entire season to interview, which is pretty cool for a 30-year-old guy.
One other name that would come to mind, and I'm terrible with names here, former Alabama assistant, former Elon head coach, current James Madison head coach. Cannot think of his name right now, but he interviewed for your job when you guys hired Hobson. He was assistant at Alabama, did a great job at Elon, and now he actually took over for Coach Houston when he came to East Carolina at James Madison, and his name is escaping me right now.
I don't know. I mean, and another name, you know, that just comes to mind, I would not be in favor of this until some serious, you know, discussions were had. But, you know, Hugh Freeze is a Southern Miss grad. And Hugh Freeze has a checkered past. Hugh Freeze can coach football. Southern Miss in the past, you know, like in basketball, we hired Larry Eustace. So that's another name to throw out there. I think that as soon as you did that, half of the Southern Miss fan base would hyperventilate and faint right there because, he worked for Ole Miss, you know, and that's not cool with us. It's generally not cool if you're in the SEC at all. And to be a graduate of Southern Miss and then you went there and then all the baggage that comes with it, I think that's all bad. That being said, my man can coach a little bit. So he's at Liberty right now. I'm not even sure we could pay him what he's making at Liberty. I think he's making a little bit over $1 million at Liberty.
That's the interesting thing. When you think about it, Southern Miss sounds like a better job than Liberty. And historically and on paper it is. But Liberty's got a lot of money. And since one day they decided that they wanted to be big time and move to Division I in football, they're spending money. So it would all depend on does Hugh want a chance to go back and coach somewhere like Southern Miss? You know, money talks, and that's the whole thing, man. If Liberty wants to spend the money, I don't know that East Carolina could match them. The American now, it's if they want to spend it, they'll hold on to him until a Power Five school comes calling.
Sure thing. And like I said, I mean, he's as much as I kind of hate to admit it, he can really coach. So those are the names that I'm hearing right now. But I think everybody in Golden Eagle land is pulling for this 30-year-old guy to just come in and just, you know, McVay it up and throw the ball all around and do what he can and bring some excitement back. And the next time you meet somebody who doesn't like Scotty Walden, it'll be the first time.
Well, he gets his chance to start his on-the-job audition 2 weeks from now against La Tech. So you got a big-time conference rival. And, sure. What is that game? Is that the rivalry of Dixie, something like that? And the game's got some name.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, these days, who knows? That might get tossed out. but yes. Right. But now it's a big rivalry game. You know, I enjoy La Tech being in the conference, much like I enjoyed you guys being in the conference. We always enjoyed that rivalry. I'm kicking myself for never making the trip. Now, it's not an easy trip, right? I don't know how many exact miles that is from Hattiesburg, but you've got to put some effort into it. That's not just like driving, you know, even to La Tech, right? La Tech's around, I don't know, 4 hours from Hattiesburg. That's nothing. Rice is about 7. I want to say you guys are in that 10 range.
That's right.
And that's a commitment right there.
Maybe even close to 12 hours.
But friends of mine that played football at USM always enjoyed playing there. They talked about the purple haze and the entrance and we had some good rivalries. We had our way with you guys for a little while. But every time we showed up, we knew it was going to be a battle. Right. And I miss it. You know, I miss all those old games, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you had your way with us for a long while, but no, as far as the distance from Hattiesburg to from M.M. Roberts to Doughty Ficklin, it is 860 miles, 12 hours, 44 minutes per Google Maps.
Yep. Right, and you know, I would like to think that, you know, program wise, with everything, with baseball, with the whole way around, I would like to think that we're, you know, comparable, but being that far apart obviously is an issue. I get it. So, but you know, in Conference USA now we got that everywhere. I mean, we'll go from UTEP to Miami, you know, week to week. So that's
I think if you talk to most East Carolina fans, and I think a lot of Southern Miss fans would agree, if we can get the administrations to come together on it, it doesn't have to be a yearly thing, but just a home and home every 5-6 years or so.
Sure.
Would be nice. You know, even if it was just a home and home once a decade, just to keep the, to keep the rivalry going there with you guys. It's such an historic game. I mean, the rivalry dates back to the 50s or 60s. I mean, it's uh-huh. been, the game was played for many, many, many years.
Sure. Well, it was always one that we look forward to, and I still remember a lot of those games. So, yeah, I mean, you know, but in, I'm telling you, in Southern Miss land, we can do that with Louisville. We can do that with Cincinnati. We can do that with Central Florida. We can do it with Tulane. You know, we're hoping to get back there one of these days. I'll say it that way.
And Jason, as far as I know, this year we're going to play basketball with you guys, so that's going to be a lot of fun. Right next to Doughty Ficklin Stadium is William Farina, and for basketball, we're looking forward to that. I know with John Gilbert being the former AD at Southern Miss, now I guess they were able to hook that up, and of course Joe Dooley, our head basketball coach, but I'm looking forward to that coming up in the fall.
Oh, sure, for sure. You know, I'm looking forward to number one, if we can even watch basketball right now. Let's hope. I know the basketball is indoors, and that's worse for COVID. But it seems to me like we're inching along, and maybe that'll be able to happen. As far as the actual team Southern Miss has, maybe that's a little better there. I don't know. But as far as the team that Southern Miss got coming back, we got rid of everybody. We have the good thing. Is a Division I talent this, and we have the trip to Reed Green Coliseum, but it looks about the same way that it did, you know, when it was built about 50 years ago. So if you watch highlights on TV of Clarence Weatherspoon back in the day on the 87 NIT championship team, well, you know, the inside of the stadium looks identical. We have actually made a few upgrades. We got a brand new floor. We've done some, and we did, we have a lighting upgrade. Up until this year, you guys know these lights that I'm talking about, but we had the lights where, you know, you had to turn them on and wait for like 20 minutes for them to heat up to a point, certain point where it would light the stadium. If they went out, it was like a 30-minute delay.
Yeah.
So we finally gotten with everybody else, the same lights that you guys have probably had for the last 25, 30 years. And, you know, the lights are able to just come on in an instant and go down and race around the stadium and all that kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. It also kind of opened up the arena a little bit. With those lights hanging out from the top, I think it closed it in. And now those are gone. So I'm looking forward to that, too. We've hired Jay Ladner as a coach. Jay Ladner is, you know, a native son of Southern Miss. And that guy probably loves Southern Miss more than I do. This is his dream job. I don't care if Duke came calling. Jay Ladner's not going anywhere. He's determined to get it back to where it was when he played here. He played on that team, that 87 National Invitation Tournament Championship team. So we're super fired up about basketball. I hope that I don't have to be fired up about it for quite a while, that football takes some of that energy away from me. But if it doesn't, then we do have that to look forward to.
Jason, one more question for me before we start wrapping this up. To me, when you look at the landscape of college football, Conference USA used to be significantly better than the Sun Belt. To me, that's not the case anymore. I think the conferences are pretty much even, and I don't mean that as any disrespect for Conference USA. I think the Sun Belt has just risen. And also, the television deal for Conference USA isn't as good as it used to be. So the Sun Belt, you see more of their games on ESPN, even though you guys are playing more Saturday games on NFL Network, CBS Sports, et cetera. Do you think it's time for Conference USA and the Sun Belt to kind of form two new leagues that make more sense regionally with Southern Miss, South Alabama, Lafayette, Louisiana Tech, Monroe, et cetera, all playing together in a same league while you have Charlotte, App State, Old Dominion, Georgia Southern, Georgia State, et cetera, all playing together in a league?
I think something's going to happen, right? And those are two leagues that are often mentioned as a package deal.
Yep.
I don't care what it looks like. If that's the way they want to do it, great. There's some people that I would like to keep around, like La Tech, even Marshall. Even that's kind of like playing you guys back in the day. It's forever away from here, but I like them. They're a respected program. I feel like there's mutual respect, kind of similar to us in Rice in baseball. You know, it's kind of far away, but I like to keep them around. So the problem with this scenario that I see is every time it comes up, the people making the argument want their school to be the center of it. So, you know, yeah. I mean, if we can keep a lot of those teams that you just mentioned, I mean,
well, to me, it would be strictly geographical. I mean, you know, you and La Tech would be in the same league because it makes sense geographically. You guys and Marshall would not be. To me, it's pretty cut and dry who would be in which league. The only teams to me that there's a question about is Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee. Those are kind of the odd guys out where you can kind of go either way with them.
No, I agree. And I don't know why Middle Tennessee keeps getting brought into the argument. People are always like, we got to keep Middle. Like, why? What do they bring to the table? But no, it would be – if I could live in a world where every Saturday, if we didn't have a game at The Rock, if I could get in my car and drive and go watch a play anyway, that's something we never had. That's something I've always been jealous of other leagues, number one being the SEC, is that they can always go, right? There's not an option. Why in the world did I never go to watch a game, you know, against you guys? It's just too far. If you guys were in Mobile, Alabama, right, I don't know if you could get a ticket to the game. So, yeah, I mean, it makes so much sense that I'm positive it'll never happen. But, you know, I got my fingers crossed. But those fingers have been crossed for quite a while.
I'll tell you what, with the money – that schools are going to be losing because of COVID and the cost of sending Olympic sports from Norfolk, Virginia to El Paso, Texas for no damn reason. I got a feeling it may happen.
Well, you know, I'll have to take a day off of work to celebrate if that happens.
How about if the Sun Belt and Conference USA would demerge? Is that something that could happen with some teams?
Well, that's kind of what we're talking about, Dave, but merging to form two regional leagues. Or are you
saying, I mean, yeah.
Are you suggesting a true, like, 2014 merger, like a mega conference?
Well, I was just wondering, or something like that, or have some kind of the reason I'm getting at that is any way that you guys, we love Conference USA. Obviously, we're in Conference USA before the American, and I just feel like I still have, like, a special place in my heart for it. And I'm thinking with when you're talking about, Kyle, the reason I brought that up is the TV deal. I'm wondering if there's a way that the idea that you had, Kyle, that you mentioned to Terry Holland years ago about the having.
There's no money in that now, dude. A 2014 league with the schools that are in the Sun Belt Conference USA, that wouldn't make any sense. Not now. I mean, what you're talking about is going back to the days of
Alliance
the Conference USA Mountain West merger.
Yeah.
Way back when, there was some money to be made there, but a 24 team Sun Belt Conference USA, there's no money to be made with that.
I'm just wondering, like a TV deal, would it be a sweeter TV deal if you had where you keep the conferences independent? Maybe you take the two champions at the end. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of something that you could do for the champions.
Well, that would be fantastic. I mean, you know, that's what we had in Conference USA for the longest time, and it was was it us and what was the other conference?
Are you talking about in a bowl game or what?
Yeah. I mean, well, for the Liberty Bowl was the Conference USA Liberty champions.
Bowl was Conference USA versus Mountain West for a while.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, boy, you know, as much as a lot of people, you know, complained about that league around anyway back in the day, everybody would give their right arm to have it back right now. But, you know, considering where we are, man, we don't like it. I mean, there's I'm not breaking any news here. Nobody wants to be here. And it probably even shows on the field, man. This is a league that Southern Miss should dominate. And we should dominate not only in football, but everything else. And we don't. It's so weird. You know, maybe this is a step towards getting back to that. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we can't keep flying across the country, you know, in everything. That's not just the football team. That's women's golf. That's, you know, soccer, volleyball, all that stuff is you can't be constantly just traveling across the continent to do stuff when you're working with a bare bones budget. So something's got to be done. Everybody agrees to that. Will the most logical thing happen? You know, you guys tell me. We're really hoping for it, but you know, who knows?
Well, the problem being is that there was a lot of, I hate to use the term misfit, but there's a lot of independent teams that led to form Conference USA, and that's the problem. Is that when you think about a lot of the, you talk about Southeastern Conference, you think about Big 12, Big 10, Pac-12, all the conferences, they have like that region, if you will. I know with the Atlantic Coast Conference, there's 500 teams now in it, but back in the day, there was like 8 teams, and it was a bus ride away. Mm-hmm. When in the Colonial and it's independent football, that was awesome because everybody, like as far as the Olympic sports and basketball, baseball, that was literally a couple hours away for the conference games, where now pretty much every conference game you have, you're on a plane.
Right.
Yeah. That is no bueno.
Yeah, no doubt. And the problem with Conference USA and the Sun Belt, and the reason I do think that with COVID that there may be some realignment with those two leagues to make things more regional, is the TV revenue is just not there. You can't justify sending your volleyball team from Norfolk to El Paso for $700 a year of TV revenue for football.
I don't think
$700. That'd be real bad. $700,000.
Well, even the TV deals are so bad that even for football, any sport for that matter, it's not making sense right now. Correct.
Yeah, I mean, I would say our number is $400,000 a year right now.
$400,000. So I was thinking it was $700,000. Wow. That's even worse.
Wow.
You know, so it's amazing we even survive, honestly. And then, you know, Southern Miss is one of those schools that I can't remember the exact percentage, but we're like the lowest in Conference USA as far as student fees, you know, going towards the athletic budget, where people like Old Dominion are around like 45%. So, you know, the IHL board in Mississippi could probably help us out a little bit with that too. But, you know, that would be going against the schools up north, and that's probably not going to happen. So the only way we can do it is to do kind of follow what you guys did, really, as far as your pirate club. You know, we got to get equal club memberships up. I think they are up this year. We got to get people to buy tickets to the Rock and show up and buy stuff at the stadium. We sell beer at the stadium now. That was probably my favorite part of Thursday. And, you know, there's got to be revenue coming in from everywhere. So it'll be so easy if we had a TV deal, like these SEC guys, $45 million check. Goodness gracious. I would love to see what Southern Miss could do with $45 million just handed to us.
Every year.
It would be, I mean, just can you imagine?
Yeah.
It's something we're always going to deal with, and we're probably never going to be the rich guy, and that's cool. I there's something to be said for that too, having a chip on your shoulder and the whole.
Now, Jason, I apologize. I had some lag on my end. We had a couple of questions or comments from one of our viewers, Johnny Gardner, when we were talking about the football coaching search, assuming there is a search after the season and the interim coach doesn't get it. He mentioned the name Blake Anderson. Obviously, he was someone very close ties to Larry Fedora from being his offensive coordinator at North Carolina, has done an excellent job at Arkansas State. They've been to 6 straight bowl games. Now he's in year 7 there. And if we have bowl games this year, they'll probably be in another one. Do you think he would – I had no idea what he's making there. Do you think he would consider Southern Miss, or do you think you guys would consider him?
I think everybody around here still holds Blake in super high favor. And if you ask anybody that knows anything about Southern Miss football, if we'd hired him instead of Ellis Johnson, who knows what, you know, the last several years would have been like. But apparently Ellis interviewed really well. I don't get it. But anyway.
He wore jeans to his interview is what I heard.
Blake, yeah, you know.
Interview and your president, who was a female, was interviewing him and basically just discounted him because he had the nerve to wear jeans and a polo to an interview.
And Ellis made a PowerPoint or something.
Yeah, exactly. But, so, no.
Anyway, but you asked, would Blake be interested? I don't know. I think that as painful as it is to say, it's kind of a lateral move at this point. Did he fall in love with Southern Miss so much when he was here that he would want to come back for possibly even a pay decrease? Probably not. I would think, but I think you knock on the door, right? You pick up the phone and make that phone call.
Did we lose Jason?
Yeah, we got. Can you hear us, Jason? It broke up for a couple seconds there.
Hello.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Sorry, my alarm went off, telling me to go to bed. No, that was my alarm reminding me to get on the show. This is 8:00. I was gonna get on at 8:10. That's what it was. So anyway, but no, I think Blake would be welcome back with open arms, and that would be an absolute home run, you know, hire if it were to happen. I mean, assuming Scotty doesn't just find lightning in a bottle and just blow us all away, you know, this year.
I actually think you guys have a better chance of getting Fedora back than you do Blake.
And we're also
maybe so. I mean, again, I'm not positive what he's, I'm not sure what he's making at Baylor as the offensive coordinator, but it's probably more than we can pay him.
Yeah, but there's something said for being a head coach, and Fedora strikes me as the type of guy that wants to lead, not be on somebody's staff.
We'll see how that all plays out, and certainly with the another thing is we'll see how things play as far as the season is concerned too. With Southern Miss, you know, you may have you keep your coach you have now. Who knows? 30 years old. I mean, look what Lincoln Riley did at East Carolina.
No doubt.
And it might be the blessing in disguise, so to speak, that you thought, oh my God, here we go with the new season. He resigns, and then you have a. You never know what's going to happen with the team after it can be a good thing after that. So, Jason, thank you so much for coming on tonight. It's been really cool to have you on. And it's funny how we have, I know with Kyle has friends down there in Hattiesburg, but we do have connections there. And certainly like we're talking about, we hope we can get you guys back on the schedule, and it will be a lot of fun to have. Maybe we can go down to the Rock, Kyle, whenever we do get that game back on.
Yeah, go to the Rock, hang out with James and Shannon, and eat Lethals.
That'll be fun. Jason, thanks for coming on. I appreciate your patience tonight. I know we've gone a little long, too, but thanks for coming on. It's been a lot of fun. And before we let you go, how can people listen to the podcast and maybe social media? I don't know. Did we lose your audio, Jason?
I think we have lost Jason's audio.
Yeah.
Jason, can you hear us?
I think you can hear us. We just can't hear him.
Yeah, no, I can't hear him at all, unfortunately. Jason, thank you so much for coming on. Let's see. Can you hear us now? Jason, thank you so much for coming on to the Top Talk and with Jamie Arrington and Jason Bailey. Jason, appreciate it, and good luck to you guys the rest of the way, and hopefully you find a coach. If not, it's sorry, you may already have him, and we'll talk to you again real soon. All right. Unfortunately, we lost there, Jason. That's a shame because we were wrapping things up and thought it was a really good show, guys. And Kyle, are you interested in the job in Southern Miss? You love folks down there in Hattiesburg so much. Would you take?
I may be expedited to Hattiesburg here soon enough, evidently. So okay. I may have to start covering Southern Miss athletics. They may like me better down there.
I don't know. I wasn't expecting to say that. Bubba, what do you, Bubba, what do we have coming up? I know we've got a big week ahead, and obviously, with the Pirates, we'll keep following them. We'll have our practice report. You can watch that, obviously, on Facebook and YouTube channel. You can do that. Coach Houston, I think, is a lot happier now than obviously last week, and hopefully by the time we have the game day, we'll look even better.
Yeah, last week on Saturday morning, we kicked off our preview show, The Inside Slant, and we'll have that once again this week. This week, it will be on Friday night, so join us during the 8 o'clock hour for about 60 to 90 minutes there. We'll be joined, not necessarily in this order, but we'll catch up with Cameron Teague of the Louisville Courier Journal. He was on the program back about a year and a half ago now when we were previewing that Louisville Super Regional when the Pirates went out there. But we'll talk to him about Louisville's season opener. We'll also talk about with App State's play-by-play, Adam Witten. They'll be getting things underway this weekend with a late added game against Charlotte. So Charlotte will be traveling up to Boone. Of course, no fans will be in attendance per the regulations with the state of North Carolina. We'll also catch up with Rennie Angolia of ESPN, Will Vandervoort of the Clemson Insider, and then also our buddies with the Golden Hurricast. Tulsa has a big one this weekend taking on Oklahoma State. So those are some of the beat writers, play-by-play voices, et cetera, that you'll hear from on Friday evening.
It's going to be a lot of fun to get you ready. Eventually, the Pirates will have a game. Hard to believe, guys. I was thinking about that earlier today, less than 3 weeks away. And Kyle, do you have a countdown clock for the kickoff again with the Pirates and hosting UCF?
We got 2 weeks from Saturday. So that'll be 14 days. I'll start counting then.
All right. So you got the 14-day clock he'll be doing on Saturday. It's going to be a lot of fun. Guys, thank you so much. What a great, great show we had tonight. And thanks to all our guests. And we hope that you'll like us on Facebook, obviously on Twitter. You can follow us at the Sports OBJ, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. You can find us anywhere, the podcast. And obviously you can watch our show on Facebook and the YouTube channel. All right. For all our great guests, for Bubba Rosenbaum and Kyle Barber, I'm Dave Richmond. You've been watching the Sports Objective and listening to it right here. Good night, everybody. And go Pirates.